each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Hallin Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. And I am sitting in today, as I do on most Mondays, for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I am just honored today to be joined by two people that I know from different parts of my life, Graziano Marcheschi, who used to work with me at the Archdiocese of Chicago and has held many, many prestigious positions in various Catholic ministry initiatives throughout the Archdiocese. Gratz, welcome. Thank you for being here.
It's wonderful to be here with you, Mary.
Thank you. And then Ariane Fisher, who is a neighbor of mine and a fellow parishioner at St. Vincent Fair Parish in River Forest, Illinois, who I met because they always sit in the front row. The Fishers have their own pew. And everybody knows it. Everyone knows not to sit in the Fisher pew, including my own children. But so that's how I came to meet Ariane, who is the mom of seven beautiful children with varying degrees of red hair, most of them.
Yes.
Yeah. But some don't.
Right.
Interesting. Yes. How your gene pool worked out there.
Yes. Neither one of us has red hair.
I know.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
They ask if they're actually mine.
Yeah. Yeah. And curly red hair at that.
Yeah.
But you've got to have some curly hair. So, yeah. So they get that from you. But,
excellent.
But a beautiful family.
I just read the other day, red hair women are supposed to be brilliant. I don't know if it's true.
Yeah.
But I read that.
I didn't read that. There are certain like genetic traits that are very specific to people with red hair. Yeah. And also some temperament issues. Well, you know, that's always been the thing with the temperament issues. But there are actually very specific sort of genetic things that pain tolerance is one of them with redheads. Did you know that? Yeah.
So they had much higher
pain tolerance.
Wow.
And, yeah, genetics is fascinating. I took one class when I was in college, and I absolutely loved it. And it's such an interesting, you know, concept, especially given what we're going to be talking about today, which is Respect Life Month. October is Respect My Life Month here in the Catholic Church, and a lot of Protestant denominations also observe what they call Sanctity of Life Sunday or Sanctity of Life Month. Because, you know, if genetics teaches you anything, it's that each human being from the moment of conception is uniquely made.
Amen.
You know, and uniquely and completely. I mean, sometimes I look at, you know, a couple of my children and I say, how on earth did I beget you? You know what I mean? Because they are so different from me. And, you know, I think that's most obviously right when you're a woman, you're giving birth to a boy, right? Obviously, your son is not you. But just beyond that, you know, neither you or your husband have red hair, and you've got beautiful curly little redheads. So God designs each of us so specifically. You know, we are unrepeatable, unique masterpieces of the Creator. So, listeners, that's what we're going to be discussing about in kind of a couple of different ways today. We're going to be talking about sidewalk counseling, which is an aspect of pro-life ministry that's sometimes misunderstood and often maligned by those who oppose us on this issue. And then we're going to talk about, you know, those kinds of things, how we can reach out and be part of the lives of women in crisis. And then we're going to wrap up by talking about a new documentary on Cardinal Francis George, who was one of the greatest voices on behalf of the unborn, was he not, Gratz?
Oh, well, he was one of the greatest voices on many topics, but
right.
Certainly pro-life was one of the huge issues that he supported.
Yeah, and was so eloquent about it.
Yep.
And I remember the day before I got married, and the Cardinal did my husband and I's wedding, and the Now vs. Scheidler case had come out. And it was one of the, you know, that case went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And I believe it was the final decision from the Supreme Court in the Now versus Shidler case, which had a lot to do, Ariane, with sidewalk counseling, as you know, is a form of the violation of the RICO, you know, the anti-mafia statutes that had been erected. But I remember the cardinal, without even just sat down, we were working on a statement. And, you know, I'm at home, I'm getting married the next day. But he came up with, you know, one line: if there had been no lunch counter sit-ins, there would have been no civil rights movement.
Amen.
And boy, did the other side go crazy over that. But, you know, this kind of peaceful, nonviolent civil disobedience, you know, has a tremendous history in, you know, American life and certainly in American social issues. But Ariane, tell me, I want to get into that because sidewalk counseling is not a form of protest per se, or civil disobedience, or even just, you know, verbal opposition to abortion. Tell us a little bit about how you got into sidewalk counseling, and then what for you as a sidewalk counselor are some of the more important components of it?
Sure. I first went out years and years ago to the Albany Clinic,
which is now closed.
Thank goodness.
And I would just like to point out that I participated in the 40 Days for Life, the only time I've ever done it, and I had Albany was my clinic. Mm. So I was there with two other people. I did my hour, and it closed the next month. Oh. I do not take personal credit
for it.
But I don't think it's coincidence. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, the next month, it shut very abruptly. And Albany was a clinic where they did quite late-term abortions, late-term electives. You know, late-term abortions are done
There's
in hospitals.
There's a new one now, though. Yeah. Isn't there up at Old Orchard?
There is a new abortion clinic opening
up,
in Skokie, Illinois, correct, that has a new spa-like feel. Now that Governor Rauner has signed HB 40, which is essentially a public funding of abortion bill, now abortions really for a large percentage of the population are free.
Yeah.
So we have new clinics opening up. Planned Parenthood's opening up 5 new clinics by the end of 2019. They've opened up a big new one in Flossmoor. And now this new clinic from out of state has opened, this kind of higher end clinic with spa services. I'm not kidding. You know, that's just demonic. Anyway, so
I'm
going
to listen with great interest to Ariane, because I want to do that at the Old Orchard
the
clinic.
Oh, yeah, that's not,
I do that.
That's up in
but I've never done it before. So tell us what you did.
So I went to the Albany clinic years and years ago, and then I suffered an abortion. I suffered a miscarriage. And I found it too hard.
Yeah,
it's to see women voluntarily making that choice to go in, and have that procedure done.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. You should say that today is infancy pre-birth infancy loss day, awareness day. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah, today is the day of that. And I have a friend who had a miscarriage who. I'll get to that at the end of the show, sent me a beautiful prayer that Mother Angelica wrote about the souls of your, you know, your miscarried or stillborn children. And so it is, it's prenatal infant loss day, I think is what the formal name of it. But yeah, that's so interesting. Okay, go ahead. So you...
And along those lines, I would invite post-abortive women to address their emotions today, because they did lose an infant, and that's something to consider. It's not just it happened once and it's done.
Yeah.
But I was going to the Albany clinic, and then I suffered a miscarriage, and I just found it too difficult.
Yeah.
To be there when women were making that decision, but that was interestingly years and years ago, before the bubble law or before you know, we were restricted from really talking to women. So here it is, it's probably 15 or more years later, and I started going to the clinic at 659 West Washington.
Okay.
And they perform, so that's downtown, it's right where Washington crosses the Kennedy.
Right.
And they perform the surgical procedure on Friday and Saturday mornings. I believe it's between 7 a.m. maybe and 10 a.m.
So they're doing
something
actual
like
surgeries as opposed to doing the abortion pills, which are now almost, I think, 50% of Planned Parenthood's abortions are now abortion pills, and they're not surgical anymore.
Mm. Oh, I don't know if they do the pills as well.
Yeah.
They might.
Do you know gestationally how late they do abortions at the clinic on Washington?
Legally, I believe they're only licensed to do up through 24 weeks.
Right.
I don't know what
kind
of checks.
Yeah, like 23 weeks, 6 days.
Yeah, but I don't know what kind of checks
they do. Yeah, the Gosnell movie that just came out, there's a lot of fudging you can do on those numbers, right? Because depending, even, you know, gestational birth ages are sometimes a little bit, you know, malleable depending on if the woman remembers exactly when the first day of her last period was and has regular cycles. Then you can really pinpoint a day. Otherwise, you can fudge a little on those numbers,
yes.
You know, and call a 23-week, 6-dayer, you know, a 22-weeker or something.
Who would know any difference? I mean...
Right, who would know? Yeah, well, a practitioner would know. I mean, you can tell if you're a, seasoned ultrasound technician, for example, you know, the rump to... top of the head measurement is usually fairly standard, and
well,
the femur measurements.
It actually, so what I found out from one of my pregnancies, they miscalculated the date, and what I found out was the later you get an ultrasound, the more inaccurate it was. I didn't get an ultrasound until I was approximately 5 months pregnant,
wow.
And they said, well, your due date is sometime in April or May.
Wow.
That's how much it can be fudged because
wow.
they can only go by the femur measurement like the first 12 weeks. So
wow.
If somebody was to estimate that, especially a girl who was maybe 14 when her
yeah.
cycle isn't regular yet,
right.
It could be fudged by a lot.
Yeah. So essentially they're doing well into the second and perhaps even early third
yeah.
trimester
yes.
abortions. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And I believe the laminaria is inserted on Thursdays.
Right.
And then the surgical procedure is done on Fridays.
Right.
And
so,
Saturdays.
Listeners, if you're unfamiliar with later term abortions, because the baby's so big at this point, they have to insert laminaria, which widen the cervix so that the abortion provider can then go in with instruments and, you know, dismember the child and remove the pieces. So, and that's done without anesthesia on the child, I would like to point out. And, I have a friend who is a pediatric anesthesiologist, in fact, who comes to St. Vincent's occasionally, and she was telling me she sometimes assists at surgeries that are done on unborn children. And she said, you know, the interesting thing just for me as a, you know, practicing physician, she does not work at a Catholic hospital. She said, but my team, me and my team are separate from the mom's anesthesia team. So the mom has her anesthesiologist. She said, I am the anesthesiologist for the baby, and I do a direct injection of fentanyl into one of the baby's legs in order to make sure, no matter what the gestational age is, to make sure the baby doesn't feel any pain during whatever the procedure the mother's having or they might be doing on the baby. So, but these particular procedures are done with absolutely no, for me, that's, everything about it's gruesome, but for me, that's a particularly horrible thing to contemplate, you know, is because pain receptors are present fairly early on, and at about 18 weeks, because some of the neurons haven't closed, from what I understand correctly from my neonatologist friends, the pain can even be more intense because you don't have, like, these caps over the pain receptors that you would have if you were an older child or an adult. So, this is going on. And how often, so you go every week, yes?
Mm-hmm.
When did you start going back? How much longer after your miscarriage, Ariane, did you start going?
Oh, it was at least 15 years.
Oh, wow. So
I
you
just,
really, really I, had to take a, wow.
Yeah, And I had, you know, a million kids in between there,
well,
too.
Right. Yeah, you've been busy.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I started going on Saturday mornings. I usually go personally from like 8:30 to 10 a.m.
Right.
But there's people who go between 6:30 and maybe 11 or noon.
Right.
On both days, Fridays and Saturdays. And the thing is, if a woman already had the laminaria put in, what a laminaria does, it's seaweed.
Right.
And it's inserted into the cervix. It removes all moisture from there. So essentially the cervix is closed because it's swollen with water.
Okay.
It forces the water out so that the surgical equipment can go in.
Right.
And what we try to tell women is even if you've already had the laminaria inserted, it's not too late.
Right.
You don't have to go through with the procedure. You can
right.
go to a hospital. You can have that removed. It's possible you can carry to term. But it's not too late.
So you see these women going in and out of the clinic and you just approach them and start a conversation?
that would be the ideal, but that's not what happens.
Okay. So what does happen? On a typical, say it's just kind of if I know everything's, you know, if anything has variety and it would probably be
yeah.
these cases, but give us a typical scenario. You're there, you're...
So we go, at the time I go, there's usually four or five of us.
Did you go with a group? Is there a group of you that are friends, or was it from a prayer group or group?
No, yeah. I just showed up one Saturday, and there's a bunch of people. We're all kind of independent, and we show up. It's
okay.
not a formal group. There's no
right.
boss leader type
right,
thing.
Right, 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 right.
A lot of us have signs. And so I show up, and let me backtrack a little bit. Several years ago, I don't know how many, it's probably at least 10 years ago, the city passed an ordinance that's called the bubble law.
Right, bubble zone, yeah.
And it means that they cannot, that no one can approach a woman who is going into a clinic if she's within 50 feet of the clinic. No one can be within 8 feet of her once right. she enters that bubble zone right. of 50 feet. And let me stress, no one.
Right.
Because the clinics eventually started, I don't know if they're volunteer or for hire, bringing in clinic escorts who routinely yeah. do go within 8 feet.
Yeah.
And they say they were invited. Now, they were invited by the clinic, not by the woman. So
right.
it's very gray. So what happens is when we go, ideally you would be able to compassionately speak with a woman and just let her know her options. Unfortunately, we are physically blocked
right.
by clinic escorts who right. will do things like basketball moves.
Yeah.
I saw a woman
blocking you out.
And, literally yeah. blocking,
yeah.
physically. A couple weeks ago, there was somebody with soccer cleats and she was practicing kicks.
Oh.
There was last week somebody.
Go finish yeah. and then we'll wrap up just this one point, Ariane, and then because I don't want to have to cut you off mid important part of your story here. So if you could, yeah, I saw in fact a video clip last week for from a clinic in Canada where a guy boxer kicked a mm-hmm. pro-life woman who was she wasn't counseling, I think she was just praying.
Yeah,
and literally did one of these like jiu-jitsu moves and jumps up and turns around with his. With his foot, kicks her mm-hmm. right in the head and sending her to the ground. I think she had to go to the hospital and get stitches. And thank goodness there was a huge public outcry against this guy. He was a hairdresser. He lost his job. But even people in the pro-choice movement said, we don't condone violence against people who are praying or who are standing outside clinics. And but I think you do. It's a very tense situation when you're out there sometimes.
It is.
Yeah.
I have never encountered violence. What I do is I go just outside of 8 feet from the door. I wind up going, the clinic escorts set up their own cones to keep me much more than 8 feet. So
right.
it ends up being like 12. I kneel down and I pray the rosary.
Okay.
And that's what I do. And I'm usually holding a sign. And I have been threatened to be kicked in the face twice.
Yeah.
Both times I called the police. They did come. They didn't speak to the person. The person, when they saw me call the police, left.
Yeah.
So there wasn't really that much they can do. But both times, they were egged on
yeah.
by the clinic escorts.
Yeah.
Not all the escorts are bad. It's not what I'm saying. But
right.
we do not generally have an opportunity to say anything other than, you're not alone.
Right.
And that's it. Because
right.
otherwise, because there are escorts there shouting,
yeah.
you can't, you would have to out-shout them to say more than that. And
right.
that's not compassionate.
No. No. Well, when we get back, I want to talk to you about some possible alternative ways to reach women as they're approaching the abortion clinic or even while they're inside, because there's new technology that allows you to do that. And I'm going to ask you, listeners, I'm going to keep you on the edges of your seat. Please don't go away. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
As the news brings us to the realities of life, there is no doubt that the devil stalks the church and the culture. It is with this realization that we urge you to ask your parish to recite the prayer to St. Michael the Archangel after Mass and to personally recite the prayer for St. Michael's intercession. Let us pray. St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our defense against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls. Amen.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change. On AM 750, WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then,
At 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Ash.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on AM 750 WNDZ, the Winds of Change show. And I'm joined today by two friends, Graziano Marcheschi. And am I saying that right?
You are.
Am I? Okay,
you're one of
good.
The few.
Good. Thank you.
Thank
because
you.
You know, we get, I have an Italian last name now, too, and we get that mispronounced as well. So I'm getting better at the Italian pronunciations. And Ariane Fisher. And Ariane, now, are you a convert? You are. So you're a convert to Catholicism. How long have you been a Catholic?
It was 1997.
Okay.
So what is that, 21 years?
And what brought you into the church?
God.
Okay, well, yeah. Okay, I know that. So ultimately, that's why we're all here. But
what did God use to
Yes, thank you, Graz. Yes, I wanted to refine the question somehow. Because you grew up in a Jewish household.
Yes.
Yeah, you did. That's so fascinating to me. Tell me how you wound up becoming a Catholic.
Well, it was a non-religious Jewish household, and I was the one out of my whole family who wanted to practice our Judaism. I'm an engineer by training, and so I was always, to me, the world is black and white.
Right.
There's no in between. And so when I was in my early 20s, I went on a search for truth. I just wanted to know, okay, well, I believe in God.
Right.
So I want to do what God wants me to do.
Right.
So whatever it is, I'm open to it. Just tell me what you want me to do, God. And so I went on a search, and I figured, well, out of respect for my heritage, the first place I should search is Judaism. And I got to the point where I was going on Shabbos weekends and staying with Orthodox families, and they were getting ready to set me up for marriage. I was pretty involved. And then
What branch of Judaism?
I didn't belong to a synagogue, but I was attending Orthodox services with friends. And I got to the point of, okay, God, if I'm going to be Orthodox someday, because to me, when I was Jewish, either you're Orthodox or you're, I didn't understand all the, I was raised Reform, but I didn't get that. And so I figured, well, I would become Orthodox. And I got to the point where I should learn how to keep a kosher home. And that was the first gray area I encountered, because I said, well, how do I do it? And the answer I got was, well, different rabbis will tell you different things. There's different ways. And I was like, well, what does God say?
Mm-hmm.
And there was no answer. And I thought, well, that can't be what God intended. And this, I mean, no disrespect towards Orthodox people at all. But for me, that was where I had trouble. I wanted an absolute truth.
Right.
Not things that were open to interpretation like that. And
okay.
So I had attended Protestant services once or twice when I was in college and didn't like those. I didn't think that was what God intended. My dad's family was Catholic, so I had attended Catholic Mass before. I was very familiar with it. And it was, as I learned more about Orthodoxy, I realized the Catholic Mass was the same prayers, the same, the liturgical elements were the same. So I felt very at home. And I happened to, at that time, go on a few dates with this man who is now my husband. And he said, well, if you're going to look at the Catholic faith, you do it for you, not for me. So I went to Mass with him once and haven't missed since, except for if I'm sick or something.
Wow.
Yeah. I love conversion stories because I think we, people like us, you, Gretz, you and I, who are kind of cradle Catholics, take so much for granted, right, in our faith. So I love hearing about people who find the Catholic faith and find love for the Eucharist, but from a different means, because I think we as cradle Catholics have so much to learn from. But I always think of Cardinal Avery Dulles, who was a convert himself. And, he said in his late 80s, people would still refer to him as, Avery Dulles, the convert. And he said, you know, I've been Catholic like four times longer than I was ever anything else. When do I get my like official card? You know, that's right. So I thought that was very funny. So, Ari, we've been talking about sidewalk counseling and the difficulties that because of Illinois' bubble zone, you know, the difficulties that sidewalk counselors have sometimes being able to present women with information about alternatives. And I was starting to mention to you, I was up in Wisconsin 3 weeks ago. I gave the keynote at Wisconsin Right to Life's annual dinner up at Wausau, Wisconsin. And they are raising money. This dinner, this fundraiser that I was at, was to raise money for what they're calling their geofencing project, which allows them to reach women via GPS, even while they're in the abortion clinic, with information about pregnancy centers. Now, I know, both of my guests are looking at me with shock and surprise. I could not believe it when I heard about this, but literally through this geofencing, they can reach women on their cell phones while they're sitting in real time, while they're sitting in the waiting room of the clinic. So it's really, it's kind of expensive to get whatever the program you need to get, you know, and they're helping the Wisconsin pregnancy centers to obtain this technology.
Without knowing the individual cell number,
no,
you can reach
them.
It's a beacon.
You know how,
it's called a beacon.
A beacon, right. So yeah. I am not as, but it's like, you know, when you're not dissimilar to when, for example, if the microphone on your phone is on and I'm talking to you about, say, Brooks Brothers Ties, and an hour later when I get home, there'll be an ad for Brooks Brothers Ties. We'll test this out because I'm sure there will be on my phone here. It's the same sort of technology. So the woman is in the abortion clinic and they can literally get ads from, you know, saying you don't have to do this. There is help. You can change your mind. The law allows you to change your mind. Uh-huh. Planned Parenthood has opened up a new abortion clinic, a big new mega center like the one we have in Aurora here. I believe that cost $3 million to build. It comes with a play center, a playground for moms who are coming with older children. Mm-hmm. I know. You can't even fathom the macabre.
I've seen that many times.
Yes.
So where they'll bring an older one in a stroller or they'll be kissing a toddler goodbye in the car and go in to kill the sibling.
Yeah, you just think, you know, Lord, I pray they're blinded. I pray they are blinded when they go, because the reality of waking up to that someday, and everyone will, that's the thing, you know, everyone will be held accountable, and, you know, everyone's moral culpability obviously is different depending on what they knew, what outside pressures were being brought to bear on them, you know, so it's tragic and it's heartbreaking. And but you go virtually every week and at least make an effort to be there. You know, who was it that was talking about this one time? Oh, you know who it was? Who David DeLeiden, who was the guy who did the undercover Planned Parenthood videos, and was on a radio show. And I called in. I had met him at a conference that we were both at, but we never really got to speak at length. So I called in and I asked him, I said, you know, you had to go in there and stand and look at fetal remains. I don't know if you've seen the videos, but they are hard to watch. And I couldn't even get through all of them all at the one time. I had to stop and go back and look at them later. But, you know, there's one clinic where he's standing and he's looking at the body parts with the abortion provider and saying, you know, would that be the liver there? You know, because we're looking for intact livers. And so I said to him, how did you stand there and pretend that you were all in for this? I would have been like crying or throwing up or, you know, something. I said, how on earth? He said, you know what? What he was talking about, he said, it brought to mind for me what St. John Paul II had said about people who do try to be that prayerful witness, like you, Ariane. And he said, someone has to love those children for the short time that they're with us. And so I would stand there and I would say, I am here and I love you. And I'll be here while this happens. And someone here loved you. And for the short time that you were here, he said, that's what would get me through. I said, I would be the one. I figured I am the one person here who loves that child. And I'm just going to be that child's, you know, friend for the short time that child is here. And boy, that was really, I thought, what a profound thing to say, but what a courageous thing to say. And so that's what I think of. Even if you get absolutely no chance to talk to a woman, someone was there loving that child for the short time that, you know, he or she was going in to be killed. There was somebody there. And you know, I know many people who have survived the Holocaust or who have Jewish descent don't like anything to be compared to the Holocaust, but it does sort of remind me of people who would try to be prayerful presences as, you know, children were being transported onto trucks and everything else, that someone would try to stand there and encourage them and make them not feel alone and frightened, you know, even though they knew what was going to happen. So, Ariane, while you're there doing the sidewalk counseling, are there also people who are standing praying, or are you guys pretty much it?
There's usually four or five of us.
Right.
Some pray, some try to counsel. That's in my experience. There's people who come earlier. There's some people who come later. When I'm there, there's usually four or five of us.
Okay.
And that's it. I wouldn't even really call myself a sidewalk counselor. I've been encouraged to do so. It's just I haven't yet found the way to, other than saying you're not alone.
Right.
Really being able to talk to the women. There were a couple of times. There was a woman who was in a car accident right in front of the clinic. And I tried to help her up. Didn't know anything, like what her situation was. She was in a car accident right in front of the clinic. She got up, went in to have her child killed. But I did get to talk to her for a couple of seconds. There was another time there was a woman who fell down in the street. She was too weak to go in. And I tried to help her up. I said, maybe today's just not the day.
Yeah.
And she said, I have no choice. And that was what she said. And that's really the big lie.
Right.
Is that the conversation has been steered to choice.
Right.
And that's just a euphemism. Because what's going on in that body, in that building, is that limbs are being removed from living children.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, unanesthetized. And that's what I think our calling, all of us, is to change the conversation back. You said about there's these spas that are being built. That's because it's a PR campaign to turn the tide away from talking about removing baby parts.
Right.
And that's what it is. Even the word abortion is a euphemism. So imagine how powerful it would be on a Saturday morning or a Friday morning to have 30 or 50 of us lined up there praying.
Well, I used to do that many years ago. So this would have been 20 years ago. There was an organization, Gratz, I don't know if you remember it. And it was the Helpers of God's Precious Infants. And it was founded by Father Philip, Monsignor Philip Riley from New York. And a couple of times he came to Chicago and led, and it was only prayer. And we would have mass beforehand. And then he would speak to all of us. And he said, you know, kind of warning us against the tricks of the devil. He said, you do not talk to anyone. You do not respond if they yell at you. You are there to pray. You let God work through you, through your prayer. I mean, he was like, I think he was a former Marine or something, and it showed. But so I went on a number, maybe, I would say maybe six, half a dozen times or so, to that particular clinic to pray, once to Albany, but the other five times to 659 West Washington. And it was a powerful experience. But boy, he said, you know, you are there to stand and pray. Let the sidewalk counselors who know what they're doing, let them talk. Do not get involved. Don't fight with anybody. And those were profound experiences. And on at least every time, there would be at least one woman who would turn around and go back and would not go in.
What strikes me is, you know, if you talk about the evil of apartheid in South Africa, if you talk about racial discrimination here in the U.S., people understand how all of us were hurt by that evil, that it wasn't just the black people who were being discriminated against, but the white discriminators were also being destroyed in the process.
Yep.
And yet so many refuse to acknowledge that the evil of abortion is hurting the entire country.
Hurts, yes, absolutely. Mother Teresa said that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you teach other people that killing is wrong when you're doing this in your own country? So, well, we'll continue our conversation after this break. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here in Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. Don't go away.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I am sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I am joined this hour by Ariane Fisher, who is my neighbor and a fellow parishioner at St. Vincent Ferrer Parish in River Forest, Illinois, a mom of seven, and someone who is a prayerful presence and hopeful sidewalk counselor, I guess that's the way.
Yes.
The abortion clinic in downtown Chicago that does late second and early third trimester abortions, elective abortions. And Graziano Marcheschi, who, as Graz has worn so many different hats, it would take me 30 minutes to go through Graz's resume. But
well, the one I want to start wearing is sidewalk counselor.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Soon to be. No, I'm going to do it.
Older father figure, Graz.
I'm going to do that.
So many girls.
Yeah.
Look, a gentle older man, because so many of these girls, there was a book that was written about 20 years ago called Real Choices by an Eastern Rite Catholic, who was the wife of a Catholic Eastern Rite priest, actually, Frederica Matthews Green. And she went from coast to coast, from Los Angeles to New York, all the major cities, and talked to, I think, at least a dozen post-abortive women in every city. And the research she wanted to do was, what didn't you have that had you had it, you would have changed your mind about having your abortion? And so she thought, okay, great, we're going to come up with this list,
yeah,
and we're going to meet all the needs. Do you know what the number one thing was? There was nobody who wanted to walk through the pregnancy with me.
Oh,
I didn't have one friend.
Wow.
I didn't have the baby's father, my parents. I didn't have one person who said, I want to do this with you. I will be your friend. Doesn't that break your heart?
It does.
Every time you think about that, you think, it just someone to say, I'll do this with you. I mean, and you know, I'm on the board at Aid for Women, which is a pregnancy center and maternity home in downtown Chicago. And the women who come to live with us, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, you know, we had one beautiful young woman, Rihanna, who she was featured at our annual benefit dinner this year. She was a senior in high school. She was living with her aunt and uncle. When they found out she was pregnant, they kicked her out of the house.
Oh.
I mean, she said literally she had no home. We had another client who was riding from one end of the red line to the other on the L at night because she had no place to live. I mean, because for whatever reason, some families, you know, there's still this stigma of unplanned pregnancy and, you know, booted them out of the house. So, you know, we find that one of the most important services we offer at Aid for Women is our one-on-one mentoring program where you get assigned to a woman through her pregnancy. And sometimes you don't see her all that often, but you call her on the phone every day. Hi, how are you doing? You know, you just become like the big sister or the mom or the grandma. You know, how are you feeling today? Have you taken a shower? Did you eat something? But sometimes it's just one other person knowing that somebody cares about you. That's all it takes, you know. And we used to, back in the day when I worked at the Archdiocese, we would do this adopt a mom and baby program where we would have a parish, you know, adopt figuratively a mom. And it wasn't just about having her baby shower, though they did that too. It was about this community becoming her family. And so it would always culminate with the baby's baptism at the parish, you know, after the baby was born. But they'd assign a couple of moms, you know, to kind of walk with the woman. And sometimes they were the ones that went to the delivery room with her because there wasn't anybody else to go. And but I think what a lot of women are looking for, Graz, is that older male reassuring, supportive presence, because they don't, so many of them don't have it in their lives.
And that's one thing I want to stress is that when you're at the clinic, quote, sidewalk counseling, one thing you almost never see is anyone talking about the right to a choice.
Yeah.
And that's the argument that always goes on about abortion, right? It's my body. It's my right to to choose, things like that. That's not what happens outside of a clinic, at least not at the one at 659 West Washington. What you see more is women who feel they have no choice.
Mm.
And that's why I'm there, to right. say, when I have the time, when I have the chance, I'll say, you know, there's free health care available in Illinois.
Right.
Your delivery
you
can be
that.
Paid.
Yes,
and,
I remember
and
you told
I
me that one time.
I get screamed down all the time when I say that. They say I'm lying. Well, I'm not lying. It's called All Kids.
Right.
And both mom and baby, the pregnancy, the maternal care, everything is covered. The baby's covered till 18. It might even be older now with health care changes. Health care is covered. There's aid for women nearby.
Right.
Their material needs could be covered. Counseling can be covered. And I also try to let women know who are leaving. Listen, there's counseling available. You just went through something traumatic. If you need help, we're there.
Yeah.
So there's no judgment against these women. But one thing you don't see is people talking about choice. Because right. they feel, it's not because just because the choice may have already been made. It's because they feel they have no choice.
Right, right.
And that's why we're there, to let them know they have choices. And this is what I offer to all people who try and steer the conversation to choice. Go to a clinic. See for yourself how these women feel desperate.
Right,
Some
right.
of them are literally dragged in by their spouses, by their parents, dragged.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a man screaming at his wife, "I told you no more girls."
Oh, my gosh.
We had the ultrasound. It said it was another girl. "I told you, no more effing girls."
Oh, my gosh.
That woman had no choice.
Yeah. Another. No. And that's what I was saying at the beginning, in terms of moral culpability. And this is why I think the church is so compassionate, right? I mean, this is what John Paul in Evangelium Vitae addresses post-abortive women directly and says, what happened is and remains severely, gravely wrong. However, the Lord understands that your moral choices may have been compromised because of extenuating circumstances. And so I always think that that's very beautiful to acknowledge, as you say, you know, so many women. Well, that's what Frederica Matthews Green's research showed, is that almost every woman she talked to had the abortion to make someone else happy.
Yes.
Not because she wanted it. It was to make someone else happy, whether she was in college and it was her parents who said, "You are not going to be dropping out of college," whether it was her boyfriend, whether it was, any variety of circumstances in which a woman can be coerced or, you know, unduly influenced to have an abortion. But it's one of those. Now, I want to talk a little bit about how Cardinal George was very much a supporter of people who did what you're doing, Ariane. It was, I think, one of the greatest legacies that he left. Not long after he came here, he did one of these with the organization that I mentioned, the Helpers of God's Precious Infants, had a prayer vigil at a clinic that's now closed over on Diversey. And he went, and he was really being taunted by the other side, by the people who, the escorts and the clinic employees. And one of them said to him, "You know, I have a right." And he turns around, and I'll never forget this because I was standing right next to him. And he looked at the woman and he said, "No one has a right to kill. No one." And so we walked across and he prayed. And as I said, I mentioned his statement after the Now v. Shidler decision came down, where he talked about, if there had been no sit-ins at the lunch counters, we never would have had a civil rights movement. So he was very much a supporter of the kind of peaceful and prayerful presence. Again, just to be that, you might just be that one person who was the only one who ever really loved, you know, that child. So, and in fact, so there's a documentary, Ariane, coming out this Sunday about Cardinal George. And Grace, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about it? Because Cardinal George's pro-life convictions take out a nice little chunk of that documentary. I got to go to a sneak peek over the weekend. So I was so pleased to see that part of it.
Well, you know, as you're saying, Cardinal George was a courageous man, and he was a prophetic man. He was a prophet.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Prophets are people who suffer for what they know to be true. Prophets are people that God uses to say what's unpopular, to say what the culture doesn't want to hear. And he was able and willing to do that, and he was willing to suffer whatever it took. So the documentary was made, I think, because it had to be made.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to Shalom World Television, only 6 months after they'd gotten here, that documentary was already on their way.
Hmm.
And if it hadn't been, I would have started it.
Hmm.
Because there's certain things that just have to happen, and that was one of the things that had to happen. The life of this man needs to be proclaimed.
Right.
And The pro-life issue is one of the many issues for which he stood tall. You know, unfortunately, Cardinal George had a reputation for being a conservative, for being a doctrinal guy. And people think that, you know, he was spending all his time crossing T's and dotting I's. But what he really stood for was Christ and the people of Christ, you know, the body of Christ. He believed that because he believed in Christ, he had to tend to Christ's body, which is the church. And of course, unborn children are the most vulnerable members of that body. And so he had a passion for them as he had a passion for anyone who belonged to Christ.
Right.
He really
had a heart for people who were like the underdog, didn't he? I think because he was physically disabled himself, you know, he had polio as a young man, and so he walked with a very pronounced limp and had a big, very big metal cast. And
he was a man who, you know, was talking with the President of the United States one day.
Right.
And who would be talking to you or me or talking to anyone.
The busboy at a restaurant.
Who wanted his attention.
Spanish. Right, exactly.
He was never full of himself because he always understood why he was who he was. He was sent here to minister to Christ's people.
Right.
And he knew that one day he was going to stand before the Lord.
Not just some of them.
Yeah, all of them. You know, a quick little story about him. I ran one of the formation programs in the diocese. He was addressing the group, and somebody asked about women's ordination. He said, well, that's not going to happen. This young woman ran out of the room in tears. The cardinal was shocked. He's like, what happened?
Yes.
You know, well, we brokered a meeting. You know, right. He said, I want to talk to her.
Oh, wow.
So he had a meeting with this young woman and a couple of other women from the program.
Right.
We're in the meeting. Down at Holy Name Cathedral, the security guard knocks on the door. He says, Cardinal, I need to talk to you. The cardinal gets up, goes to talk to the security guard. There's a woman downstairs who says she has to talk to you, Cardinal.
Okay.
He's like, well, I'm in a meeting. He says, yeah, but she's insisting she needs to talk to you right now. He says, well, who is it? Well, the security guard described her.
Uh-huh, and it was the woman who had run out.
It was a woman that he knew who was kind of like a homeless person, a needy person. He goes, you know,
God's special people is what we used to call
them. There you go.
The cardinal was very fond of God's special
people.
He said,
if I don't talk to her now, she's just not going
to be at
peace the rest of the day.
Right.
He went down two flights of stairs. He spoke with the woman, came back up. We continued our meeting.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to drive him home that day. And as we were going home, I said, Cardinal, you know, that was really kind of remarkable that you went to talk to that woman. I said, when I hear people vilify you, I'm going to tell them that story. He looked at me like a 13-year-old boy, and he said, people vilify me? I turned red as a beet. Yeah. And I said, well, you knew that, didn't you?
In a nice way. They vilify you in a nice way. Well, on that note, we're going to go to our final break. Listeners, please don't go away, because Graziano Marcheschi is going to be giving us some additional inside details about the new documentary on Cardinal George's life that's premiering this Sunday. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold. Up or down. This way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org. And click on the radio tab to make your donation, one way or the other.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change. And I am speaking with Ariane Fisher and Graziano Marcheschi about, all sorts of things here during October, which is Respect Life Month. And we were just talking a little bit about Cardinal George and what many believe was his sort of prophetic personality and prophetic gift that he had while he was Archbishop of Chicago. But Ariane, you and I had been discussing something offline that I really want to make sure we address before we wrap the show up, and that's the hashtag Shout Your Abortion. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about what that means?
Sure. As far as I know, it started trending about 2 years ago, and Oprah Winfrey has been promoting it. It's a hashtag that has recently been used to normalize abortion and take the fear and dread and embarrassment
and the stigma away
from getting an abortion. And they are encouraging women to use the hashtag Shout Your Abortion to talk about basically how glad they are that they got an abortion. And in fact, one woman recently wrote about it and used the profile photo of a woman who was very actively pro-life to promote it.
Wow.
Yeah. And so what I would like to encourage women to do for post-abortive women who regret their abortion, please go ahead and use the hashtag Shout Your Abortion.
Right.
Shout about it. If this is something you regret, please let other women know that there are side effects, both to your body, your emotional health, later on. So you, please go ahead and shout your abortion and use that hashtag. Let's take it over.
Yeah.
If you talk to any confessor, any priest who hears confessions, you know that many, many women regret their abortion.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. And, you know, for a lot of women, you know, there have been some quote-unquote studies done on post-abortion aftermath and whether or not it's a thing. And if you talk to, you know, a woman who's had an abortion, usually right afterwards for the first few months, all she feels is relief, right? She had to go through this horrible thing. Whoever was pressuring her to do it has, you know, gotten off her back now. So she's relieved. But often, you know, within, you know, 50% of all the abortions done at Planned Parenthood are repeat abortions. 50%, according to their own statistics in their annual report last year, their 2017 annual report, 50% are women having their second, third, fourth. There's no legal limit on the number of abortions you have. So 50%. And Vicki Thorne, who was the founder of the Catholic Church's program Project Rachel, she has done tremendous research on post-abortion aftermath, and she maintains that those are replacement babies. So you have your abortion, you're relieved for about 3 months, then you think, oh my gosh, what have I done? I'm gonna get pregnant again. Those pregnancies are intentional, but then because the first abortion didn't solve any of the problems that led her to the clinic in the first place, you know, after the abortion, she doesn't have a better job. If she's homeless, she doesn't have a place to live. If she has, you know, trouble with her boyfriend or her husband, those aren't solved by the abortion. In fact, they're probably exacerbated by it. So she's right back in the same situation she is. So what does she do? She goes right back to the abortion clinic, right? So, but I love that idea, Ariane, of women who have suffered after their abortions, you know, giving voice to that, you know, to that pain and trying to make other women aware that this may, you know, this may seem like it's the answer now, but it may not be long term.
Yeah.
But Cardinal George was such a great supporter, Gratz, of Project Rachel and of the Respect Life Office of the Archdiocese. It was my honor to serve under him. When he came to Chicago, that was my first job with him, and he was so generous with our office in terms of providing staff, making himself available, going to the March for Life. He was the first Archbishop of Chicago. Cardinal Bernardino, of course, had gone, but he was the first periodically. But he was the first Archbishop of Chicago to go every single year to the March for Life. And again, you remember how, you know, he couldn't walk the whole route because of his leg, but he would always say, "There's all those kids." I remember the year he died. And, you know, he said to me, Mary, there's all those kids. There's 500 kids going. Somebody has to be there. There has to be a bishop there. And
yeah.
So if I have to go in my wheelchair, I'm going to go in my wheelchair. Wow. But he had such a dedication to it. And so, Grass, if people want to see the documentary, I am getting so many people asking me where they can see it.
Well, there'll be a public showing on Sunday, October 21st at Mundelein Seminary. Unfortunately, it's at an odd time, 11:15 in the morning.
Okay.
They're having a rector's mass there, and this is going to follow the mass. However, the very next day, it's going to premiere on the Shalom World Television website.
Okay.
So Shalom World is the Catholic international media ministry that created this documentary. You can find them, just Google Shalom World Television, and the documentary will premiere on the website the next day. I don't know. I wish I knew right now the time that it's going to premiere.
Okay.
But it's going to remain then on the website.
Oh, great.
So even if you miss the premiere,
okay,
you can go back and look for it, and you'll be able to view it at your own convenience anytime you want.
Okay, fantastic. And when will that – so you don't have an exact date, though, when it's going to premiere on –
Well, it's going to premiere the 22nd of October, the day after.
Correct.
But I don't know the time.
I see.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, terrific. So if people just Google Shalom World TV, they should be able to find
Shalom World TV.
The information about
it. And you'll find
–
and a lot of other amazing Catholic programming as well.
Yeah. Oh, I have been so impressed with Shalom, the programming from Shalom World. And can you just – you briefly told a story. We've got about 4.5 minutes left here. But you briefly told a story when I was with you on Saturday about the men who started Shalom World and its humble beginnings. Could you share that with the listeners? Because I just think it's fascinating.
So if you want to hear of something that's truly a work of the Lord, 30 years ago in a remote village of India, you know, and I always say, if you have a notion of remote, multiply that exponentially because this is remote in India. a group of young people, you know, 20-somethings, sitting in a circle praying and felt a leading from the Lord to create an international media ministry. Now, this village didn't even have electricity, but they did have a broken television set. So they stood around the TV. They literally laid hands on the TV, and they said, Lord, if it's your will that we do this, just show us the way. Well, they decided to create a magazine. Of course, nobody wanted it. It's in India. Who wants a Catholic magazine? Well, within a year, they had like 30,000 subscribers. Within a couple of years, they were up to around 300,000 subscribers. So then they got the courage to think television.
Right.
And they opened up studios in Rome, in London, in Australia, in Canada. That we just opened one in Ireland. When it was time to come to the United States, they settled down in Texas, and they decided, well, you know, we better find out what we need to create a studio. So they called a studio equipment supplier, and they said, what are we going to need? He gave them a whole list of the materials they needed. And they said, we're planning to launch our network here in the United States on April 27th, the very day that Pope John Paul II, the author of the new evangelization, is going to be canonized. Hmm. So he said, okay, are you ready to do it? He said, oh, no, we don't have any money. So they decided they were going to have to raise their money. Well, a couple months go by. This TV supplier hasn't heard from them. He calls them up. He says, you're still planning to launch on April 27th? Oh, absolutely. Well, he says, if you don't put in your order by 6 p.m. today, there's no way you're going to get your equipment on time. So they asked him, well, how much money do we need by 6 p.m. today? $300,000. Well, guess what they did? They knelt down in prayer. Not for an hour, not for two, for 3 hours they knelt in prayer. At the end of that prayer time, the leader says to them, I want each of you to sit down and write the name of 6 people you know whom you could call to ask for donations. They wrote down the names. They started picking up the phone. 6 o'clock rang. They had $350,000.
Wow.
They launched the network on April 27th.
Wow. That is my daughter's birthday, so I will always remember
God.
That. Yes, that is my daughter's birthday. Well, that is, you know, that is very reminiscent to me of the way Mother Angelica providentially started, you know, EWTN with, what did she had nothing.
Right.
And she wanted to buy a satellite and you know, there was a whole crazy story, very, not crazy, but very providential story. And so that sort of leads me to what I'd like to close with. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, today is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Remembrance Day. And so it remembers infants who were lost in abortion, who were lost in miscarriage, who were lost in stillbirth, you know, who dies shortly after birth from other causes. Mother Angelica composed a beautiful prayer that I just became aware of. A friend of mine who had a miscarriage posted it this morning. And it ends, "I thank you for the life that began for so short a time to enjoy so long an eternity." Isn't that beautiful? So that, yes, that even though, and St. Therese of Lisieux's mother had a kind of a similar prayer where she talked about that she lost 5 children in infancy and said, you know, "I had them for such a short time, but I know I'll be them again, with again forever, and they'll never really be gone." So Graziano, Ariane, thank you for the time that we could have talked another hour easily. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure and a blessing to be with you. This has been Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. Goodbye and God bless you.
Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? Marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.